61 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
We welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. It's always a happy day when we welcome back into our studios Nan Calvert for her monthly visit to the morning show. And it's a doubly happy day because we have with us as well Dave Giordano from Root Pike Wynn, Executive Director, who has a couple of really exciting projects to tell us all about. We welcome both of you back to the morning show. Nan, tell us a little bit about what prompted you to issue the invitation to your friend and colleague Dave Giordano to join us today.
Well, something very good has happened for certainly the community of Mount Pleasant, but really it benefits us all in that another habitat will be preserved and not paved over. So today we're going to spend some time discussing Campbell's Woods and what's happening with it now. And I think a lot of people know that for a long time, its fate was sort of hanging in the balance. And in fact, it was kind of in limbo. There was at one point in time plans to create a high-density residential senior living complex there, which would have meant, of course, you know, hundreds of thousands of square feet of impervious surface and certainly changing the face of the woodland dramatically for ever, essentially. The residents around the area weren't particularly in favor of it, and so things kind of dragged on for a while, if you will. But due to the a lot of factors, but you know, primarily the leadership and foresight of Mount Pleasant officials, and certainly the guidance and expertise of Root Pike Wynn, Campbell's Woods hopefully will stay Campbell's Woods and be improved dramatically in terms of its ecological footprint in perpetuity. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit today, as well as other things.
Excellent. Yes, very, very good. So first of all, Dave Giordano, we're happy to have you back on the morning show. And ahead of us talking about Campbell's Woods and another project that you recently announced involving Cliffside Park, I wanted to give you a moment to talk about something that we just heard a news report about, namely something occurring at Samuels Myers Park on the lakeshore of Racine, right around the Racine campus of Gateway Technical College. You happen to be there for the festivities, I think. So tell us what you know about that.
Yeah, well, thanks again for having me back on the show. It's always great to be here. And Nan, as always, does a great introduction to these topics. I don't know that I could have covered it any better. The Samuel Myers work is work that was done really primarily by the city of Racine, and they've done a fantastic job of restoring that coastal area. One of the programs, the grant programs that was used to do some of the restoration is the Wisconsin Coastal Management Program, and that funding from that is supplemented from the federal government as well. So there's this financial chain that brings money back to our local communities to do projects like this. So we're grateful for that program. We've been fortunate, Root Pike Wynn has been fortunate enough to receive some of those grants as well. If you haven't been down to Samuel Myers Park and seen the restoration down there, I highly recommend it. It's a now a very unique, restored area, and you know, a special thank you to Dr. Julie Kinzelman, who was with the City of Racine and did a lot of that work, initiated a lot of that work. Without her being involved, I don't think that project would be where it is today. So we were fortunate to spend some time with the governor, Governor Evers, and talk about that project and some of the other grants that funded other projects in the area like ours.
Excellent. And what a beautiful day to be down there.
It was fantastic. And, you know, the native species that have come back are it's just phenomenal. When you do these restorations, you know, the old phrase, you build it and they will come. this is, you build it or you restore it and they will come back.
Right. There you go. All right. Let's turn our attention to the primary matter at hand, which is namely this tract of land known affectionately as Campbell Woods. First of all, and Nan has already gotten a good start on this, give us a little bit of a history lesson on Campbell's Woods. First of all, let's start out with exactly where it is for the sake of anybody who's not ever actually laid eyes on it themselves, so people know exactly what we're talking about. And then something about the history, even ahead of the hullabaloo that surrounded it about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, I like to talk about Campbell Woods in terms of looking back in time. And we've all had that moment where we've just wondered how things would have looked, let's say, pre-settlement, before this area was explored and founded. And there is a special spot in our watershed, in the Pike River watershed, that's like that, and that's Campbell Woods. So the UW system has a archive of 1937 aerial photography. That's really kind of the first aerial photography that occurred here in Wisconsin. And so early on when I started at Root Pike Wind, I always wondered what this area looked like before a lot of the development occurred. And the one area that really stuck with me, because still a lot of farming had occurred by 1937, the one area that hadn't really been farmed was the Campbell Woods area. So when you look at that area, you see oak savanna, you see old growth forest, you see, excuse me, some prairie, and that is like looking back in time.
Wow.
So that becomes the kind of barometer for, well, what does some of our restoration work look like today in areas that were farmed? With Campbell Woods, it's located on the north side of KR, just east of Old Green Bay Road. And this particular part of the parcel or that area is about 20 acres east of some of the homes that were developed in phase one of that whole development area.
The term old growth that you mentioned, is that a very specific term? And if so, what exactly does it mean?
You know, I'm going to actually defer to Nan on this one because she'll explain it a lot better than I will.
Sure, that sounds like a Nan question.
So all native habitats go through phases, if you will. And so when you're talking about a woodland, you know, you have a new woodland with very young trees. It's very diverse. And then the young trees become older trees and they get very tall, and the understory changes quite a bit. And then it eventually becomes a climax forest where it's really quite old, and the dynamic and the plant groupings have changed, and you might not have very many species in terms of mid-story growth and ground cover and that sort of thing. So that's kind of the Reader's Digest version of it, but that's kind of an old growth. A lot of people think of old growth forests when you think about the redwoods and the you know, other things out west, but whenever you have woodland habitats, if they've been maintained, you know, in other words, they haven't been done asunder, hopefully they get to the point where they're old growth and they're climax forests.
Wow. And so we're talking in a sense about certain things kind of getting eliminated then, because these huge trees then kind of crowd out the sun and
right.
so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then eventually the huge trees die or they topple over. It opens up the canopy and then, you know, it regenerates. It starts over again.
So it's not a bad thing to get to the point where we have an old growth. It's actually part of the natural order.
No, it's a wonderful thing. Yeah, if you can get to that point, it's a wonderful thing.
So there are parts of Campbell Woods that qualify as old growth forests then.
Yeah, and like I said, Nan's explanation pretty much covers it. The area that now is protected has never been farmed. So you also have some native seed bank in there too that once we remove the invasives, it's actually amazing in some of our other projects when you get rid of the buckthorn and the honeysuckle and the garlic mustard and all the other stuff that really wasn't there pre-settlement, you have this amazing seed bank that comes back of native species that are really supposed to be there, and they're just waiting to pop.
Mm.
And so when you see that happen, it is some pretty awesome gratification.
Mm. We're speaking with Dave Giordano from Root Pike Wynn. He is here at the invitation of Nan Calvert. This is her monthly visit to the morning show. So take us back approximately 6 years. What occurred with Campbell Woods where suddenly it was kind of in the target of developers? I mean, what happened to allow that to be possible?
Yeah, you know, what makes Campbell Woods amazing and what makes it attractive for development is actually the native area, that old growth forest, those big, you know, 150-year-old, 200-year-old oak trees. And so the idea of developing it is, you know, it was in some ways a very good business decision. In some ways, environmentally, it was a very bad decision.
Hmm.
So what's happening now is that we've found this kind of grand compromise. Some of the area did get developed. Some of the area will never be developed. We now have a conservation easement on 13 acres, and that lasts in perpetuity. So future generations will hopefully thank all the people that were involved to make this happen.
So who owned the land 6 years ago? And did they sell it to a developer? Is that what happened 6 years ago?
So I can't get into all the details on that arrangement, but the original landowner was the Campbell family.
Ah.
And so there was a partnership that was put together to develop that remaining approximately 20 acres for the senior living community. One of the things that exists on that land is also a pretty sizable wetland area. So you have this wetland forest, which is also very rare in the area, but it also makes it very hard to develop. And over time, the village of Mount Pleasant also realized how valuable this was ecologically, more valuable than what it was from a development perspective. And so their views started to change on what to do with this land. So it became even more difficult to develop that land because there were new requirements on, having a low impact kind of development.
Mm.
So that starts to alter the pro forma, the business model for making that development actually happen. So that's really kind of what put it into a state of, let's call it a state of difficulty in terms of development.
Right. So in other words, those initial plans were, if not halted, were slowed down considerably and made more difficult because of some of these restrictions that were put in place.
That's perfectly put.
All right. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't just come in and just mow the trees down and then build their senior living facility or whatever. It had to be done in a very particular way. I suppose kind of like when a building is categorized as a historic site, and so then that means if you're going to do any improvements on it, they have to be done in a very, very particular way and often a very expensive way. And that's kind of what happened here, it sounds like.
Yeah. And as development occurs in this area and will continue to develop, the one thing that we're seeing, even over the last couple of years, is there's this heightened sense of awareness from our municipalities that, whoa, we need to look at these natural spaces too. What makes this area beautiful and unique are some of these natural areas. So it builds our sense of place, and that actually makes the area more attractive. You don't need to develop every square inch of the county or the watershed to make the Kenosha-Racine area attractive. In fact, it's the opposite.
Right. I was just going to say that is ultimately counterproductive if you do that. So.
Right.
So ultimately, the plans for development of Campbell Woods hit this snag, if you will, and from what you were saying, ultimately this land fell into foreclosure. Can you just tell us a little more about exactly when that happened and the circumstances under which that occurred?
Yeah, that's, I could write a book on the 2 weeks that led up to the actual purchase agreement and closing on this property. There were a lot of different people involved. I certainly wasn't the only one involved in making this happen. There was really a team of people, partners, even beyond Root Pike Wynn. So Sam Schultz from the Village of Mount Pleasant approached me. He's the director of development. This is maybe about a year ago, and said, this area is going to go into foreclosure, and we need to think about how we can acquire funds to protect that area. And we went through an exhaustive set of activities to try and secure that land, and through grants or donations or other means. And ultimately, none of those were really producing. So about January-ish, we learned that the property would go up to a fire sale or a sheriff's sale, meaning they were going to auction it off. And so all of a sudden, the pucker factor got a lot higher for us. Not just Root Pike Wynn, but for the village and even the county, who has been involved in this all along as well. So at that point, we all came together and said, okay, how can we make this happen? With these three entities, how can we make this happen? And we were fortunate enough where, the village and the county, they do have some set-aside funding for what I would call special circumstances. And all of a sudden, this project fell into that special circumstances category. So I really applaud both the village and the county, their staff and their board, for looking at this differently than what they did, 20 years ago. The mindset on this parcel had changed, and it changed for the better. When we realized that we had at least enough funding to make a sizable difference, then it became, well, who would own the land and who's going to take care of it in perpetuity? And that's where we stepped up, Root Pike Wynn. And really, it was our board of directors. And, we've always toyed with the idea of becoming a land trust for these kinds of circumstances. And our board a couple years ago changed our bylaws so that we would become a land trust, so that when these special circumstances came up, we would have that as kind of an option of last resort. Well, that foresight ended up working out perfectly here for Campbell Woods. So this is the first parcel that we actually own now. And so all of those things kind of really came together in an accelerated fashion. And, I think the other amazing part of this is that the decisions that were made and the votes that happened at the village and at the county were nonpartisan. Everyone agreed that this was the right idea. This had to get done, and it did.
So nobody wanted a Burger King filled at Campbell Woods, except maybe Burger King. You said something interesting about how the perspective on Campbell Woods and what should be done had changed quite dramatically from, say, 20 years ago. Is it that we have different people now who see it differently, or is there some other explanation for why people's perspective on this changed so dramatically?
I think that everybody realizes at some point in their life when they're able to look back that there's some things that maybe they could have done differently or they think about differently. And so I think just in general, we've got more knowledge and more perspective on how valuable these natural spaces are to our sense of place, you know, what we talked about earlier. And I think that's probably the number one driver here. Hmm. These assets are, you know, maybe 20 years ago were looked at as you know, just development opportunities. It's just the forest. Who cares? Now, when we see all this other development going on, we're like, you know, these forests are going to be pretty darn rare, so we need to find a way to protect them. The other thing I would add, and this is something that happened in 2013, is that the Pike River Watershed Restoration Plan was completed. And that is really the gold standard for watershed restoration, according to the EPA and the DNR. In that plan, there's four parcels or four areas in the watershed that were viewed as significant and should absolutely be protected. And Campbell Woods is one of them. So positioning that information, a valid plan that's gone through exhaustive review and approvals and input, public input, that really substantiated the value of this parcel.
So speaking of value, we're talking about a lot of money. And I think we're talking about more money than Root Pike Wind actually has in its pockets at the moment, right? My understanding is that this purchase is sort of contingent on more money coming in and being paid out over time. Can you just give us some of the specifics of that?
Sure. So the village and the county have contributed $750,000 for the purchase of 13 acres. There's a remaining 7 acres that Root Pike Wind has the option on to purchase at a different price. And we've got 10 years to raise the funds to do that final purchase. So hopefully when this is all said and done, we'll have 20 acres, the whole entire area, under conservation easement and preserved in perpetuity.
Great. And I think that the figure I saw in the news story was something like $400,000. Does that sound right? Or am I remembering that right?
It's less than that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's around $200,000.
Okay.
Yep.
So when we're talking about all of Campbell Woods, so you are, we're talking about 20 acres now. What percentage is that of what all of Campbell Woods once upon a time was? I mean, how much was developed versus how much remains undeveloped?
Yeah, so I'm going to use some approximate numbers, but I think I remember that whole area is about 60 acres. Hmm. There's about 20 acres in our proposal. There's some remaining parcels that are still developable in terms of single-family homes. It might be 3 or 4 parcels in total. So, yeah. So at least we're protecting a third of what was there.
Sure. And that's no small matter. Mm-hmm. So tell us what the next step is going to be. I mean, what is going to be happening with Campbell Woods and what specifically will Root Pike Wind be involved in?
Right. So our next step, really, our efforts now are to secure that remaining 7 acres. So we're looking at grants. We're looking at donor opportunities. We're looking at corporations getting involved. We're looking at, you know, any and all proposals for naming rights on a trail system that will ultimately be built through there so that there will be public access. We want the public to be on this site experiencing a place that is, again, going to be pretty darn rare in southeastern Wisconsin. once we secure that final 7 acres, then we will start to pursue restoration grants to actually go in, and as Nan mentioned, you know, bringing back that understory, getting rid of the invasive species like buckthorn and honeysuckle and garlic mustard and all the other culprits. So that, you know, we anticipate this will take, you know, a good 3, 4, 5 years to secure those funds to make that happen. Once the restoration is complete, which will take at least a couple years, then that we'll be putting a trail system in, and that area will become public, but very passive. You won't see soccer fields there. I like soccer, but this is not the place for a soccer field.
So the restoration work will not commence, at least in a really serious way, until this other financial piece is taken care of. Is that, do I understand that right?
Yes, that's correct. There may be, you know, we try to be flexible and agile. I think that's one thing that makes our organization special and allows us to do some of the great things that we've done. There may be a situation where we do try to restore at least the 13 acres while we're also trying to pursue acquisition funds. But right now, our plan is to really focus on getting that last 7 acres secured.
So how much of Campbell's Woods have you yourself seen? I mean, have you had the opportunity to really walk through it, or have you just, like the rest of us, seen it from the road?
I have actually been on site and walked through it in January. It's not as interesting in January as it is right now. You get a sense that that place is different when you walk that area. You just feel that it's different. And while it's beautiful and passive right now, I try to close my eyes and look at what it's going to be like when we're done, and when people see how amazing it is and what a look into the past it will be.
So who will actually be doing the restoration work? I mean, who will actually be in there doing it? And will they be, will it be you? Or, I mean, others with Root Pike Wind? Or will you be directing them to do it for you? I mean, how's that going to happen?
The short answer is all the above. Some of the work we can't do on our own. We will certainly champion the process. We'll be the project manager. We'll be the fiscal agent for any grants that come in. We have a great group of volunteers that love getting out in the woods and doing this kind of work. But like I said earlier, there's certain work that needs to be done there that needs to be contracted out. And so when those funds are secured, then we will go through a bidding process, look at some good contractors that know how to do this stuff.
Sure. So, Nan, for a project like this, what are we probably talking about in terms of the most important stuff that needs to happen, and how does it need to happen?
Well, first, you'd really like to have a very comprehensive plant list, what exists there now, and then compare it to what would have existed prior to European involvement, shall we say. A really comprehensive study of not only the natives that are probably still there in short supply, no doubt, but then also the invasive species that need to be taken care of. And then from there, you develop a plan. And so obviously the first thing to do is get rid of those invasive species. But as you're doing so, then you are reintroducing native species that should be there, that have been suppressed and crowded out by, you know, invasive species involvement.
And does that mean planting native species, or just letting the natives that are already there to spread?
Yes. Oh. It means both of those things. Right. So hopefully, you know, the thing with particularly our spring ephemerals, those plants that come up very early on in woodlands that are native pollinators absolutely have to have in order to survive. It takes so long sometimes for their seeds to germinate, you know, sometimes 7 years So hopefully some of those seeds have remained viable in the soil, and given the opportunity and the right conditions, they'll be able to germinate. But at the same time, you're not going to rely on that necessarily. So, you know, you're going to be reintroducing native species that would be appropriate and bump up the diversity as much as possible. So you can do that by seeding, and you can do it by planting, rootstock or trees and shrubs and all kinds of things that belong in there.
Fantastic. We're speaking today on the morning show not only with Nan Calvert, but with Dave Giordano, who is executive director of Rootpike Wynn. We've been talking about the acquisition of Campbell Woods and the preservation of it and the restoration work that will begin there. And in relatively short order, one hopes, once some other financial matters are taken care of. Dave, we want to also talk about a news release that we just received involving yet another project that involves Rootpike Wynn, Racine County, and Cliffside Park. We just got this news release, I think, within the last few days. So I think this is a new development and all kinds of exciting things happening with Rootpike Wynn. So explain what is going to be happening there.
If you've never been out to Cliffside Park in Racine County, it's a coastal area that is also similar to Campbell Woods in that it's pretty rare. I call it Racine's Grand Canyon. Hmm. There's a massive ravine through there. The land type's very diverse. There's a lot of dynamic forces going on. And so it's a really cool place to be. The area is about 160 acres. There's some campgrounds, there's some ball fields, but there's a large area of what we call potentially restorable wetlands.
And just explain exactly where this is so people can kind of get their bearings.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it is it's just south of the Oak Creek Power Plant, right into Racine County, almost on the border. And the big beer barons of Milwaukee first used that area as a growing space for their hops, for the beer, for all the breweries. So it's been farmed. That's an area that was forested wetland, forested swamp, and a lot of the trees were cut down there, and it was primarily farmed. Mm. So that, for the most part, doesn't qualify as old growth.
Right.
So now, what's special about that place, one of the main things that's special about it is it has, with those potentially restorable wetlands, it also has huge potential for being a migratory bird stopover. Uh-huh. So it's within the Lake Michigan Flyway, and there's not a lot of open water. In fact, I don't think there's any open water in Cliffside Park, whereas pre-settlement, there was a lot of marshy, swampy kind of pond areas there based on what we can tell from some of the historical records. So now we've got this opportunity to put some of that open water back in and in those restorable wetland areas. So that's exactly what's going to happen this summer. We've been fortunate enough to receive a grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to do that restoration. It's about $130,000. And that work started this week, some prep work. There's three major ponds that will go in there, about 5 acres, and that will happen over the summer. And then that area will be replanted. And, like Nan says, and she's coached me on being patient with native plants, it'll take years for that area to kind of reestablish. But once it does, that area will be teeming with even more wildlife than what's there right now.
Hmm. So a couple things jumped out at me in the news release. One of them is it talked about you creating new open water wetlands. So can you explain what that distinction is, of normal wetland versus an open water wetland, or are all wetlands open water?
I might defer to Nan on this one if you want to chime in. Or
so, wetlands are probably one of the most misunderstood habitats. Because when we say wetland, everyone thinks that you're going to see water above ground all of the time, but that's not true. So a wetland can be wet all of the time, or it can be wet part of the time. Hmm. So when you think of ephemeral ponds, that's a wetland situation. But there
where they're sometimes there and they
and
sometimes,
it's sometimes not. Right. It also has to do with the plant family, if you will, that lives there. It has to do with soil type and consistency. But it is wet. There's far more water in a wetland than, say, a prairie or, you know, something of that nature. Now, you can have wet prairies, but it has to do with the water table, where it is, soil type, plant types, and other things.
Right. So a wetland is wet,
yes.
But it's not always maybe visibly wet.
It's not always visibly wet. And there are all different kinds of wetlands as
sure.
well.
So what is an open water wetland then? What does that term refer to?
You're going to see open water somewhere in it, probably all of the time.
And by open water, you just mean water that mm-hmm. we can see above
mm-hmm.
the surface.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so there's as Nan explained, there's some art and science to it. There's areas that we're going to create that will sometimes have open water. There will be areas that we're going to create that predominantly are going to have open water. It's that open water that waterfowl are looking for, those migratory mm. birds are looking for. So right now we're in the midst of a pretty good drought. And so there's not a lot of wet land out at Cliffside right now. But in normal circumstances, in those ponds, there should be at least some water available for waterfowl and amphibians to do their thing.
Mm. So explain physically what has to happen in order to create open water wetlands. I mean, who comes in and what do they do to make that happen?
Yeah, so we, again, we don't do any of that work ourselves.
Right.
We hire the smart people and the people that know how to do this kind of work to make it happen. And in this case, we've hired a firm called RES. They are very good at doing this kind of wetland work. What specifically will happen is that it will be an excavating project, essentially, where they will come in with earth-moving equipment, and they will take and carve out these areas to a depth of probably no more than about 3 feet. Once you get past 3 feet, it stops becoming kind of a wetland and becomes more of a true pond.
Mm.
So then that spoil will be relocated to other areas of the park. And in one area in particular, we're going to raise the area up so that eventually we'll have a kind of a scenic overlook over these wetland areas. So you can see all the cool waterfowl and other species kind of habitating that area. Once that spoil has been relocated and placed properly, then that area will be reseeded and replanted. We have a much bigger vision for that area as well, in that beyond just these ponds that we're creating, there is still a lot of invasive species work that needs to be done there. So that's sort of our phase two. And then I'm also pretty excited to announce, and there's not many people that know about this yet, so I'll do it here today, but we actually are in a we just started a partnership agreement with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and we will be restoring that ravine that I talked about. That ravine
at Cliffside Park,
that ravine has become highly eroded. It dumps about 1,000 tons of sediment into Lake Michigan every year.
Wow.
So if you've ever been down there and you see where that ravine is carving away at those clay banks, it's pretty cool. But when you start to understand how much excessive sediment is entering into Lake Michigan, mostly clay, then you go, yeah, it needs some help. So,
in other words, it looks cool, but it isn't cool. I mean, it's doing some damage.
Yeah, it's a delicate dance. You know, there's the process of erosion is a natural thing. We feel like, based on what we've seen, what the Army Corps have seen, and others, some of our other engineering partners, a lot of excessive erosion is happening through there because you're, again, with development, you're having more of these flashy events. The idea of just conveying your problem away, which is excessive stormwater downstream, well, downstream now has an issue because of what's happening upstream. And that's happening in that area in Caledonia where it is highly developed and there isn't a lot of stormwater storage and infiltration happening anymore. It used to be, predominantly, like I said, wetlands, swamps, wet prairies, and now it's mostly developed. So any opportunity that we can have to sort of try to bring back some equilibrium, that's what we love to do.
Hmm. So is Cliffside Park a park that people can visit?
Yes.
I mean, it's you're using
and
that
should
term.
Visit. It's awesome.
Okay. Tell us a little more about it. It's a place I've never visited, actually.
Yeah. So if you're headed up Green Bay Road, get off, I believe it's at 6 Mile Road, and you'll head towards the lake. And there's a lot of diverse areas there, which is really cool. There's wetlands, there's prairie, there's forest, there's the what they call the clay seepage bluffs, which is essentially the all the till that the glaciers pushed up against Lake Michigan. It's a very dynamic area. Again, lots of erosion occurring, some of it naturally, some of it we feel like is influenced by a lot of the surrounding development. Some of the areas of the park, quite frankly, are kind of dangerous. The ravine that I talked about, if you're not in good shape and not careful, you could take a slide or a tumble down some of these areas, so be careful when you get close to the coastal buffers there. The beach, on any given day, you may have a large beach or there may be no beach there at all based on what Lake Michigan's doing.
Right.
And one of the things that we're also doing with the Army Corps grant is we're going to explore having permanent fish passage into this tributary up this ravine. Currently, it happens very sporadically. We will create the conditions where we can get some migratory fish moving up into that ravine and into that tributary, which will be just excellent.
Cool. The map in your news release mentioned also some areas of prairie. Are you also doing something with prairie areas in Cliffside Park? In terms of making some changes?
Yeah, I think the change is that this is kind of that phase two that I talked about. We need to address the invasive species that are starting to move in. And so we'll eradicate those and bring in the native, what was there, at least in part, pre-settlement days. There's areas there that don't really qualify as wetlands. There's a lot of sort of crossover space, it could be a little wetland, could be a little prairie. Regardless of the designation, when you walk through that area, you'll see all these diverse land types, and I think that's what makes that area special.
Yeah. The news release also said that certain trails will probably be closed temporarily when some of this work is being done, in part to just keep people safe.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's different activities that are going to go on there where we just want to keep the public away from. The trails won't be closed long. Usually when they're in there doing the work, they'll close the trails off. When it's when that work's done, they'll open them back up. And that's really kind of weather dependent and schedule dependent. We try to give as much communication about that as possible because a lot of people use those trails back there.
Sure.
The majority of the work should be done by the end of the summer.
Very good. And so that is work that is either about to begin or has already begun.
Right. There is some prep work that has already begun there, but the major earth moving equipment will probably be brought in over the next couple of weeks, And that work will be, again, happen from June into July.
Very good. Again, this is Cliffside Park, this extreme north Racine County, right at the lakeshore, right around 6 Mile Road. So something to check out when people are in the neighborhood. I want to circle back to Campbell Woods for one quick question. In the news story that I saw most recently, you were quoted as saying that this was one of four areas in the Pike River watershed classified as critical to preserve and protect. I'm just curious what the other three are.
Oh, you put me on the spot.
Oh, sorry.
I think I know the other three, yeah. One is Parkside, the natural areas on the Parkside campus. One is Hawthorne Hollow.
Hmm.
And the other, I believe, is the what's somewhat sandwiched in between is Petrifying Springs.
And so we're talking then with Campbell Woods about something that is of comparable significance and how important it is for it to be preserved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know the full history on Hawthorne Hollow or Petrifying Springs, but like with Parkside, I mean, a lot of that land was farmed too. So while you go out to the cross country course and even the new mountain biking trails, you'll see that area is predominantly forested, but a lot of the trees there are not old growth. They're,
right.
They're second growth. The Campbell Woods area that now we are preserving is old growth.
Yeah. Well, it's so exciting to see that coming to pass, and we'll be following what occurs with great interest. If people want more information and or want to support Root Pike Win, can they visit your website and maybe make donations? Would that be helpful?
That would be extremely helpful. And, yeah, if you go to rootpikewin.org, you can connect with us. You can connect with me directly at dave@rootpikewin.org. I just wanted to thank a couple people here. I have to thank because, again, this has gone far beyond what I was capable of doing on my own. Again, the Village of Mount Pleasant, Racine County, this would not be possible without them. They stepped up. It was huge. Carl Holburn, a friend of the organization, was also very helpful in making this happen. Al Nordiker, the agent for the landowner, Marion Campbell, who ultimately agreed to these terms. She's to be thanked. Our board, they stepped up in a hurry to make this happen. It all happened within a week. And specifically from our board, Mike Lubar, our president, and Joanne Speca, they were deeply involved in making this happen. I wish I had more time to talk about it because it actually is really interesting how quickly things came together. But this was really a community effort to save an incredibly valuable piece of land, and we're very grateful for that.
Dave Giordano, Executive Director of Root Pike Win, thank you for being here to tell the story.
Thank you very much for having me.
Nan Calvert, I know you have a couple of announcements before we finish up.
I do. Speaking of Hawthorne Hollow, their Pike River Benefit Concert Series begins. It's the first one of the season on Friday, June 23rd. The show starts at 6 p.m. in the amphitheater. Gates open at 5. Admission is $10 per person at the gate. Food and beverages such as soda, wine, and craft beer are available for purchase. And when it's available, you can purchase produce from the Heritage Farmstead at Hawthorne Hollow. So the first performer will be Yves Francois and Rhythm de Vie. He's played there many times before, very, very popular. He's a jazz trumpeter and with a whole long list of awards and connections. Go to Hawthorne Hollow's website and read a little bit about him. Really interesting cultural icon bringing people together. So I think this will be a good way to kick off the concert series. And then not to be outdone, the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center has its Pacas and Pints events beginning. There's one on July 27th. It's from 5 until 8 p.m. Music will be by Ethan Keller, food provided by Dragon Pit Barbecue, and beer will be provided by Little Port Brewing Company. You have to register for this. There's limited tickets, so just go to the website. You can take a chance and pay at the door as well. It's $30 per person that gets you a really cool alpaca pint glass. It gets you some beer. You get a tour of the alpacas, and then an $8 donation toward all of the things that go on at the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center. Really fun, fun evening.
Sounds fantastic. Very good. Nan Calvert, thank you for arranging for today's program, and we look forward to seeing you at some point in July.
Yes, I'll be back, and it'll be a really good one. It's all about sustainable farming practices.
Fantastic. We look forward to that very much with Nan Calvert. We're approaching 9 o'clock here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, out of the archives, Eric Klinenberg and his fascinating book about a terrible heat wave in the city of Chicago.